Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
All right, everybody, we are back. It is Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri. Took a short hiatus. We weren't able to get to you at the end of last week. I was traveling, Chris was traveling. Just didn't sync up. It will never happen again, I promise everyone out there. Chris, how are you doing, my friend? It is Monday, May 12th, and we are getting right back into the swing of things.
Yeah, I'm good, Dan. I miss you. I feel like I was seeing you every day for like a good 10-day stretch, and now we had 3 days off, and I'm like, where is this guy? What's going on?
I was in Orlando. You were in Orlando as well.
I was in Orlando as well.
Pro Box. I was there for Most Valuable Prospects. Denier the Fear Perro got dropped hard.
Man,
you see that?
I did. I was watching. I was texting you during the show. I was at the steakhouse. I had it on my phone. I was doing my I didn't do my steak review because I was alone. I'm just sitting there at this steakhouse, and I ordered the same thing I always order. But I got my phone, and I got the fights up, and I'm watching DAZN. Well, listen to my man Dan over here, MVP Promotions.
Me, Nonito, and Wade Plem. And we had Denier the Fear, who was signed to Ring Magazine, is looked at as like maybe in a short list of the next future heavyweight contenders. And he's in there with this guy.
A Pro Navarro. Box alum, by the way. That guy.
Do you know his story? He made his debut at 147.
Yeah, so I saw that clip about that. When he was at Pro Box, I don't know how that guy ever weighed 147. He looked, because he was even bigger when he fought at Pro Box. Like he's a bodybuilder, like type.
Yeah,
guy.
He's got a bodybuilder build. He's just all like all muscle, all strength. I mean, not the best technique. He gassed out, but he started
pretty
off
durable his career at 147. Though. He was pretty durable.
He took some shots. He started off his career at 147 in 2018. Fought a few times at welterweight, took a 5-year break from the sport, came back at 220, fought a few times at 220. Then his promoter asked, can you make light heavyweight for one fight on 6 weeks' notice? The guy dropped 40 pounds in 6 weeks, makes light heavyweight, wins at light heavyweight, goes back up to heavyweight, and then he drops Perro. Like, it wasn't just like a flash knockdown. Perro.
No, he was hurt.
If this guy Navarro had a little more in his gas tank and had a little more stamina, he would have won. He just ran out of steam. He had nothing left after the third round, and Perro just got his legs back. That was the main event. It was pretty good.
Did he drop him once or twice?
Twice in the third
round.
It was
round. Twice, right? I thought it was twice.
96,
yeah. I saw that highlight. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at the guy. I'm like, oh, I know this guy. I've seen this guy fight, and I'm looking him up. I vividly remember him walking around the Pro Box campus all week, and I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? I thought he was one of the strength coaches. I didn't think he was a fighter because he literally looked like a bodybuilder. And then he got in there and he fought. I'm trying to look up who he fought. It was somebody good, and I was like, oh man, this guy's gonna get killed. Oh, Fernie Velez Jr.
Yes, guy. So that's like a video game.
Yeah, he and he's good. He's very good. So I was like, all right, this bodybuilder guy's got nothing for. Yeah, it was a fight. It was a fight, and he took a tremendous amount of punishment. But I'm like, oh, he's gonna gas out, but he didn't. He stayed in there. I think that was a 10. Was that a 10 rounder? I think it was. No, 8 yeah, rounder.
It was a fun night out in Orlando. It was cool to see. Bob Santos was talking to him. Talking to
love Bob.
Sean George, who trains Hai Zhang.
Very good.
A lot of the it's fun. You know, when you're at these events and you get to just hang around, and just talk boxing by the pool and. You know, everyone was still kind of talking about 2 weeks ago in Times Square or 10 days ago in Times Square, what went down there and the lack of punches. And that's where I want to start the show before we get into what happened over the weekend is I found someone sent me a link to a former Pride Fighting Championship stipulation they had in their rule set. Of course, Pride Fighting, one of the most iconic MMA outfits in
soccer
the world.
Soccer kicks. Yeah, kicking guys while they're down. Surprise, brutal.
Legendary stuff over there in Japan. They were a little ahead of their time with how they ran things and their rules and everything about
Rampage
it.
And Vanderlei Silva, like that's where they became stars. Those guys are absolute savages.
Didn't know it's now defunct. Doesn't exist anymore. Did not know that. I watched a lot of their old fights growing up. I remember you would watch the UFC YouTube compilation, then Pride Fighting would come up next and be like, oh, this is more hardcore than UFC. This is brand. It's ECW of wrestling. Remember ECW?
Yeah. Extreme wrestling. Yeah.
Pride Fighting is in that category. But they had something revolutionary, I thought, at the time, is a red card, green card, yellow card system. So Pride Fighting, in their attempt to get fighters to throw more punches, to get rid of inactivity, is they had a card system. A red card resulted in a 10% deduction of a fighter's purse, and it could be given out without disqualification for stalling or not throwing punches, not initiating, quote-unquote, running. They weren't given out that often, but this is something that obviously can be implemented towards boxing today. What are you saying?
I vividly remember these cards, watching those coming up. Because this is the early 2000s. So I was still kickboxing then. So I was watching a lot of this stuff and Pride and watching those guys come up. And yeah, I remember those cards coming out and the Japanese crowds just going nuts, because they want blood. Those crowds over there, I know we're used to watching Japanese, boxing, and everyone's very, they kind of sit on their hands. Everybody stays kind of quiet. Pride was a little different. Those guys, they still did the clapping, whatever. But if there was an action, people were not happy about that.
In light of what we saw in New York and in Saudi Arabia, do you think that a promotion, do you think that a sanctioning body will take it this far and institute some type of penalty for not throwing punches?
I don't see it. I don't see it happening. For one, it's just a different sport, boxing. I don't want to say it's a classier per se, but it's a sweet science. It's a finer art. And it's not just like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It's fought over 12 rounds. It's a very long time. Also, the risk of corruption and bias is huge in that kind of situation. It's part of a game plan too. If you're trying to slow down the pace, it's not entertaining as much, but some guys just fight like that or need to fight a certain opponent like that. I don't see it happening.
Well, what can change then? I mean, I kind of agree with you. I think it's putting way too much power in the hands of referees who we've saw this past weekend in the Navarrete fight are still making mistakes despite video replay systems behind them too, also making mistakes. I think it puts a lot of power into the referee's hands. And now we're talking about taking money out of fighters' hands, which is probably the only thing that's going to get their attention. A red card. Okay. What does that even mean? But you start taking away money, 10% of my purse. I mean, that's a significant amount. Then on the flip side of things, these guys are making 10, 20 million. If Canelo gets a 10% deduction, it's more embarrassing than it is a shot
financially
in his wallet.
Debilitating. Yeah,
right. He might look at that and be like, 10%, that's what I paid. It's my daughter's outfits for this trip to Saudi Arabia. It means nothing. But there is I'm just thinking of things that could be done, because one thing I will say about Turkey is he does listen to the fans. You remember how long the original pay-per-views were? They were 8 hours long. Yeah. Concerts. Mm-hmm. Got rid of concerts. He streamlined the process. He lowered the price of pay-per-views, even though the last pay-per-view was a little bit higher. The pay-per-views were down to $25. So he does listen to what fans have to say. And there's no way you cannot listen to what has happened, did happen on May 2nd in Times Square and in the following day in Saudi Arabia in terms of the type of fights that we saw there. And it's not his fault either. I mean, this guy shells out the money and puts together really good fights. I mean, he can't control what's going to go on inside of that ring. But it got me thinking about what rules can be instituted. But I do tend to agree with you. It does alter things too much. You cannot tell a fighter how to fight. You got to just hope that it just turns into a thing where fans just lose interest in them. Or just the way it kind of should be, a natural thing where Devin Haney goes in there against Jose Ramirez doesn't throw punches, doesn't fight a style that's really satisfying to fans. So therefore, if you were not a Devin Haney fan, you're probably not going to want to watch him again. If you're on the fence, you're probably not going to want to watch him again. If you're a fan of Devin Haney, you have a really hard time defending him. So maybe that can happen, but this is interesting to see these cards being pulled out.
No, I mean, and listen, like you mentioned, you can't blame a promoter for guys not putting on entertaining fights or choosing an entertaining style. I think it was just kind of just the way everything fell together. You know, it wasn't great, but it was just like two back-to-back cards. And, you know, you got fans who are watching these fights and they're paying for them. You had to pay for Friday and Saturday. And then, you know, the entertainment value isn't there. And then you see their purses and you're like, whoa, 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 you're making $10 million and you're throwing punches like it cost you money. You would think it would be the opposite, but it's not. I agree. I don't know what promoters can really do in order to try and make these fights more interesting. I don't think you can. I think it just has to be the movement of the market. Like you said, in terms of the eyes that are tuning in, the people who are buying the pay-per-views, you know, if there's a guy who's hitting the card, he's just not that entertaining. I don't want to check it out, but listen, there's ways around that. Floyd did that. Floyd was getting hell for years from people. He's too defensive. I hear older guys say that now. Finally, Floyd, he ran, bro, which is ridiculous, but guess what? Fights. Go back and watch his fights now. We would pray for at the top of our sport to not throw punches the way that Floyd didn't throw punches or ran. I love the run thing. When people say Floyd ran, I literally look at you like, oh, you don't know shit about boxing. Oh, you didn't watch these fights. Mayweather-Cotto was awesome. And Cotto was a dangerous guy. Floyd shouldn't have stood in front of him, but he chose to, and he made it entertaining. Floyd could always do that. That's the market. But also, Floyd moved around the market too. He found other ways to get people interested in his fights. He started being really brash, talking a lot of trash, being controversial. So people wanted to tune in and people wanted to see him lose. So, I don't know. I there are definitely ways around it, but you're seeing a little bit of a shift. I think, you know, Floyd, because of the undefeated record, every kid grew up and go, well, if I'm going to make $100 million like Floyd, if I'm going to be Money Mayweather, I can't lose. I can't get hit. I got to be clean. I got to have an O. I do feel like there is a shift, but still, I think this is a little hangover from that Mayweather era. Some of these young fighters are like, I got to go the Floyd route.
Yeah. It's going to be hard. During your time, did you ever have like a promoter come in and say, this wouldn't happen to you, but have you ever heard of a promoter saying, all right, you got to be more exciting in there? Or another, one thing I could also see is maybe referees issuing more warnings. Like we see warnings for holding, but
they rarely push for action, which is when you hear it, it's rare.
Well, maybe that's going to be a change. That could be a little more subtle of a change. Where does it come from? You know, that's how it works in boxing. Nothing rarely ever changes unless it has to, unless there's some type of money involved, unless there's some type of big time change that's needed. Like it's very rare that you see a change like that. But who would it come down from is my thing. Is the promoter taking the brunt of it? Will Turkey and his people and like it will come down on the whatever sanctioning body they have and say, all right, tell your fighters tell the promoters to throw more punches. Then that trickles down to the referee, but maybe the referees can be a little more active in terms of telling fighters that, you know, like, here's a warning. And if you don't, maybe not 10% of the purse, here's a warning, happens again, taking a point away.
Yeah. I mean, listen, so your first question, did I ever experience that with promotion? No, not as a fighter, but I have, listen, it was kind of an unspoken word. Like I know with Top Rank, it's not even just about winning. If you don't perform, you get cut. They don't keep you around. If you're not entertaining, if you go out there and just go get through the fight, you're not going to get the same opportunities as other guys. You're not going to make the money. They understand what their investment is all about. Their investment is entertainment. I know Robert Garcia, for example, as a coach, he realized what the market was. He was like, all right, people like knockouts. Guys who score knockouts, guys who are aggressive, guy throws, the Brandon Rioses of the world are going to make a lot of money because they're very entertaining. So stylistically from him, I think there was a shift with the way Robert trained his fighters, because Robert wasn't like that. When Robert fought, Robert was a boxer. Robert was a boxer puncher. Sure, he had knockouts, but he was a boxer. He was a clean, fundamental guy, much more like his brother, Mikey Garcia, is. But his fighters oftentimes are brawlers. These guys go out there and they bang. And because he understands the market's different now. The fight fans want action. They want blood. They want knockouts. So that comes a little bit. There's that unspoken idea. Like, all right, this is the way we're training. These are the kind of guys who get paid. Hey, you want to be on the wall? You want to be on the wall of Robert Garcia's boxing academy? Well, you got to go out there and fight, dude. And I think the gym, that happens over there too, the culture in the gym. But I'll tell you right now, Pro Box TV, the way Gary Jonas runs the shit, man, he says it all. We say it on air. Listen, we don't want any holders. We don't want guys who don't throw punches. We don't want guys who are you know, disrupting the action. We want people to fight. And if you don't fight, you don't come back. If you fight and lose, you can come back. You know, that needs to be more the idea from the promotions. You can lose a fight. As long as you're entertaining, you can come back. As long as you try to win, you can come back. We got too many guys who are not taking risks, who are being elevated and getting big prizes, meaning money. There needs to be just, I think it's more of a shift from philosophy. An unspoken agreement and a cultural, philosophical mentality of the sport. But that's just, you know, it's hard to predict the movement of the market.
Yeah, it's hard to implement this.
I do like the idea about the ref, though. Warning, hey guys, a little more action. Steve Smoger was always really good at that. He'd pull your hands away. I remember I had a couple fights where Steve ref my fights, and yo, he was physical. He didn't let guys clinch. He would pull your hand down, which I didn't love, but like at least he's forcing the action, and he was very verbal. Come on guys, yeah. I need more action.
One of the only refs where the towel was thrown in and he threw it back.
He intercepted. Nope. We got a good fight here.
Uri Foreman versus McCutcheon. I'm not ready to go home yet, said Steve. I don't care if Uri Foreman has one leg and he's getting pummeled by Cotto at Yankee Stadium. Speaking of referees, one championship, like I said, has instituted a similar rule that Pride had. And as recently as last year, March of 2024, referee Herb Dean at a one event in Qatar made headlines by employing a red card against a fighter, prompting questions about its significance and rationale behind this use. Red and yellow cards in MMA originated with Pride FC and is distinct from the unified rules adopted by mainstream MMA organizations. According to those rules, referees have discretion to issue warnings, deduct points, declare no contest, disqualify fighters for foul play. For this one, it happened to be with inactivity. He disqualified Arjan Bulhar from the match against another name that is really long. Bulhar's tactical approach, characterized by passive engagement, lack of offensive intent, resulted in repeated warnings from Dean. Despite previous yellow cards, Bulhar continued inactivity, which prompted Dean to issue a red card in the third round, DQ'd for not throwing any punches. So it's still being instituted. It's part of the unified rules of MMA. Doesn't mean that every promotion has to use it. UFC doesn't use it. Bellator, are they still around? I'm pretty sure they didn't use it.
But I don't think Bellator is around.
This is still being used at one championship. Herb Dean, he pulled out a red card on your ass. Like, imagine in Times Square, everyone's there watching. All eyes are on Devin Haney and his return. And he is just skating around that ring. And all of a sudden, a red card comes out. That would be absolutely wild.
That would be wild. I don't know. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. It would be pretty cool to see. But that's something that I think MMA really took under its wing, was understanding that yes, it's a fight sport, but it's about entertainment value. And you know, in terms of the rule sets, the way they kind of shifted everything in the beginning to make fights more entertaining, they've always said that. Boxing is definitely different. It's definitely old school, old guard. So it would be a tough transition to see that. But listen, like you said, everyone's still talking about fights that were 2 weeks ago with a negative light. So you could see a shift based on that. And I think probably the best would be to start with the referees, giving them a little more power to be verbal and pushing guys to fight more. And maybe... maybe some white, yellow, and red cards. That's wild. Yeah, wild
not like disqualification is really drastic. That's probably never going to happen. But points being taken away, warnings, like more where, like, I wouldn't say like humiliation, but it's like, all right, Haney, you're not throwing shots. Like Ryan Garcia, who threw less punches than Devin Haney. I know Devin Haney's getting the brunt of all this because of, like, he just physically looked like he was running and coming off the year that he had. Haney's getting the brunt of it. Ryan Garcia deserves a ton of, I think, even more
criticism
because, I mean, this is a guy that we're talking about, face of boxing, main event
of the night, yep.
Going up against a guy that he was expected to blow out. He gets knocked down, doesn't show anything, doesn't throw even less punches than Haney, lands less punches than Haney. That was just a bad one. And I don't want to, obviously, we're 10 days removed from it. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because someone brought it to my attention how we can make a change and what we'll see differently. But I agree. First, number one is more of a philosophical change. Telling these fighters to throw more. I think this was a wake-up call for a lot of people organizing these fights, maybe getting rid of the setting up a big fight beforehand. I think that will go away or will be thought about differently moving forward. But I just thought it was interesting to see what can be implemented and how we can make changes in this sport. Moving on to this weekend. More controversy, Chris. More
always
ridiculousness. More Emmanuel Navarrete always finds himself either in super exciting fights or crazy controversies. You know, against Liam Wilson, he was down on the canvas for like 40 seconds and was able to get up and win that fight. In this fight against Charlie Suarez, in the sixth round of what was a very entertaining slugfest, Suarez cracks him with a shot. Blood just pouring out of Navarrete's eyebrow. And immediately you're like, oh, that's got to be a headbutt. ESPN says headbutt. The referee, most importantly, says headbutt. But upon further review, that's a punch. A punch mm-hmm. caused that cut. For some reason, the replay booth, headed up by Jack Reese, says it was inconclusive. And the order of operations here is if the referee says it was a headbutt and it's inconclusive on replay, I can't change it. That's the official call from the referee, headbutt. Even though it was caused by a punch because there was a little bit of a gray area where it was it the glove, was it the head? Ultimately, the fight is ruled in favor of Navarrete. It goes to the scorecard. It's been later been ruled to a no contest. But this should be a win for Charlie Suarez. You hit a guy with a shot and he can't continue anymore because it causes a cut. That's a win. Charlie Suarez got jobbed here, man.
Yeah, I mean, part of it was that Navarrete was winning the fight. He had hurt Charlie multiple times. He hurt him in the first round with a right hand. He was hurting him to the body several times, even in the round before.
Close fight on the scorecards, though.
I know. I was surprised by that. It didn't seem that close to me. Charlie Suarez was accounting himself well. But I just felt like he was working so hard in there just to stay in the fight. And Navarrete is one of those guys, especially with the late power and those wild shots he comes on. But at the end of the day, it was a punch that caused the cut. And yeah, he should be a TKO winner and a champion of the world right now.
That's crazy. Like Suarez,
are they going back? I heard somewhere that they're possibly making it a no contest or a no decision.
It's a no contest, but
oh, they did.
Go a step further. And just reverse the fight, which they'll never do. Like the same thing with the tank and Roach fight. They were never going to reward the win, the tank. They were never to Roach. That was just never going to happen because
people were thinking it would, but they're like, we know us being in the sport, we know that doesn't happen.
Right. They're just never going to go that far. Like the no contest, I think Ryan Sangalia, who's a great writer in the boxing world, that's like someone picking your pocket and returning the wallet back with no money in it. You know, like Suarez that has nothing, still has nothing to show for it. Oh, okay. You didn't give me the loss. You gave me a no decision or no contest. And Top Rank
we need an immediate rematch. No, right.
Yeah.
But Calvary the good thing there is you get paid again. So.
Yeah. And then Navarrete's all for it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it does gum up the works of 130 now because that was supposed to be a fight where Navarrete was going to win and move on and look for bigger fights, potentially with Espinoza, with the All-Mexican clash. Kakache fought over the weekends, another 30-pounder that would be an interesting fight. But yes, this comes up the worst. So now he's got to heal, right? Because Navarrete, that cut was gnarly. Do you see how open that thing was?
I've never seen a cut bleed that fast. Like it was like immediate, like shower.
Like explode, pop, open.
Through two layers, he said it went through of...
Well, if you see the shot, because it was a left hand, you know, like because Navarrete dipped and it kind of hit him at a weird angle where the punch was like coming down as it hit him. So it looked like it hit, caused the cut. And then as on the way back, it looked like the inside of the glove of Suarez actually laced Navarrete, as he brought his head up, and it seemed like that opened it up even more. Because that was the thing, when it was closed, it wasn't that bad, but as that thing opened up, you can see how deep and wide it was, which is why it was bleeding the way it was. But also, guys who cut a lot of weight bleed worse. Mm. Throughout the years, if you watch guys who are really, really like Arturo Gatti used to bleed like crazy. He would have a little cut and the thing would be gushing. Guys who struggle making the weight and then rehydrate a lot, get really heavy between the weigh-in and the fight, generally are worse bleeders. They don't clot as well. And Navarrete, obviously, he had trouble making the weight in this fight. He's had trouble making the weight in the past. He actually has missed weight before. So you got to keep that in mind too. But in the day, Charlie Suarez fought his butt off, but he gets another payday. He gets another shot. We'll see what happens. And hopefully they make that rematch because the guy deserves it.
Well, another thing too is Navarrete really struggled to make the weight. I mean, he was up on that scale. He was like 130.3. I think he made the weight by exhaling. I didn't know it was a thing. Like, I saw a tweet. It said, I think it was Lance Bugmeyer. It said, Navarrete makes weight by exhaling. I think he let out like a big breath. Made it.
Because so, the airway's 0.3, apparently.
Unbelievable. But he has a lot of issues, Navarrete, making 130. Like, who knows if he even, if they do
he
a rematch.
Like he struggled to make 35. Like, he didn't look great on the scale of 35 either.
That guy's something, man. He's an experience. You don't know what you're going to get. He might not make weight. He might lose. He throws punches from ridiculous angles.
Everywhere. Just dives into shots.
Yeah, I think that his past wars are catching up to him where, you know, a guy like Charlie Suarez, no offense to him, is giving Navarrete. He's just going to be in battles now for the rest of his career, Navarrete. And he's not really old. Is he even 30 yet? Which is crazy.
He's been around for a while, though. And like you said, he's taking a lot of punishment.
He's been in some absolute war. Every fight he's in, it not only is it like physically demanding, it's just like mentally demanding because he's 30 years old. He has all these controversies. Like the Liam Wilson one was nuts where, you know, he was down for like, he got a generous 10 count and then, you know, spit out the mouthpiece. It was like 40 seconds from when he went down to when he got up.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy. But another thing, too, that was kind of ridiculous here is that we have this replay system, but it doesn't even work. Like, yeah. Everyone could see that was from a punch. And then on top of it, which is even crazier, is they weren't even getting the best angles. Like, ESPN went to their State of the Union, State of the Fight.
State of Boxing.
Yeah, you've been on it. State of Boxing. They went to that show, and they go
State
into
of
the
Union.
State of the Union. Like, this has gone to Congress. This is how big this is. This is now Wolf Blitzer's reporting on this. State of Boxing. They go to State of Boxing and they go to the truck, and the truck had better angles of it than the freaking guys ringside watching it. And then everyone, like Moretti, tweets it out, and it was like so conclusive that it came from a punch. And everyone that was on the fence beforehand tweeting at me, because I said, that's a punch. Everyone's like, I don't know, Dan. That looked like a headbutt. Looked like the glove. There's nothing clear about it at all. That's the right call, is to say that we don't know. But after they showed this other angle that ESPN had, that where ESPN wasn't able to show the commission, it was like, oh, yeah, definitely a punch.
There was problems, quote unquote, with the truck and then in the Roach tank fight as well. They couldn't get it in time. Or something like that. It wasn't released from the truck in the time that it was available to make a light of what was going on. So I feel like that's a tactic. That's a way to push off proper decisions and say, oh, this problem with the truck. Oh, the truck we can't get it out there. I mean, yeah, we have this idea now that we can use replays, but are we really using them to the best of our ability? Is it another place for corruption to sneak itself into boxing? Yes, ultimately, yes.
I don't know if it's corruption. It's just like, at this point, this was just incompetence. Like,
it's
either one or the other.
Well, yeah, you either are knowingly doing something and you're corrupt, or you're incompetent and you can't get it done. So it's not good either way. It's not a good look for the sport either way. But I've been in this sport a long time. I usually lean towards corruption rather than incompetence.
But what would be the corrupt part? Is this getting Navarrete a win?
Navarrete is the money guy.
But Suarez is signed to Top Rank, which kind
of... Of course, but what do you do with Juarez? How old is Juarez? Isn't he older? What do you do with him?
Never really knew much about him heading into this.
I've called him fights on undercards, deep undercards recently. he's not going to be a golden boy. He's not a Manny Pacquiao. Emmanuel Navarrete is a big deal. You mentioned all the controversy that swirls around him. Listen, he's a super popular guy. He's super fun. He's got a great story, great record. He came up the hard way through the top ranked stable, ripping through guys like Isaac Dogbo. Valdez, he's beat twice. You know, he's a Mexican star. He's certainly the money guy. He's certainly the A side. So if there was going to be corruption, it always goes to the A side. These kind of tricky things never go towards the B side. When anything seems kind of funky, it's always one side. That's to me shows that it's not just incompetence.
ESPN having the better angle than the actual guy. Like, what other sport does that happen in? Like, I'm watching a lot of NBA playoffs. They have a crazy replay system. They go to it almost too much, where it slows the game down tremendously. Yep. And they always get it right, though. They figure it out. I mean, it's a good thing to have. It's like a, you know, it's there when you need it.
It's a tool. It's a good tool.
It's a safety net. I mean, like, it is hard for – it's really hard for the referee. I give the referee benefit of the doubt here. It's really hard to tell in a split second. Was that cut caused by a punch or a headbutt? I mean, just looking at it, like, you would say headbutt, because that just looked like
– just the way their bodies were, the way that Navarrete dives into shots. Like, he literally dipped his head all the way down. If he had actually done what you're supposed to do in proper technique, that punch wouldn't even hit him. If he actually bent his knees instead of just bent over at the waist, that punch would have never hit him. Definitely not the way it actually did. Yeah, he just dips over his front foot. He does everything wrong. It's crazy. He dives into punches with his head way up in the air. He dips under, doesn't bend his knees at all, and just dips his head down. If he actually had proper technique and bent his knees, that punch would have missed by a mile.
Well, that's the beauty of Navarrete. Does everything wrong.
The beauty of Navarrete is how ugly he is, how ugly his style is.
I know. I was like, this fight's awesome. I was like, seeing how this is going to end. And of course, it just goes that way, where we're like, oh, man, this is nuts. It's nuts. And another thing, too, is like, maybe we should revisit the fact that why does like the referee's call have to be like, oh, no, now we can't go back against the referee because that's the main call and we can't change it. That's a very interesting point, too. That should be relooked at. I mean, the referee made a split-second call. It doesn't happen in baseball. When there's a bad call at first and they challenge it, the umpire usually makes the call, and then it's reversed. In this case, the referee said headbutt. The replay shows it wasn't. Change it. Charlie Suarez, they're going to do a rematch anyway. Suarez gets the win. He's champ. Maybe the contract and the deal points are different this time around if he won. There are ramifications of it. Yes, Suarez does get the rematch, and he should get the rematch. I think they're both talking about top rank, and Navarrete's open for it. But he's not champ right now. He doesn't get that glory. He doesn't get more money on the back end. He doesn't get anything to change in the rematch. So, I mean, I know you agree here, but that's just part of the ramifications of a system that is broken in boxing.
You know, it's funny, you know, as we're talking, I'm thinking, like, earlier in the episode, we're like, we should give the referees more power. They should be able to tell these guys to fight. Now we're like, why do referees have so much power?
Idiots.
That's the thing about boxing, man. It's so complicated. It's not like any other sport in the world out there because it's almost not. It's the closest thing to war that we have, that we watch. And, you know, things get muddy. Things get muddy in war, and they get muddy in boxing, too.
Another thing, too, there's just so much red tape in boxing. Like, and MMA has unified MMA rules that every promotion has to use. Boxing, it's like every promoter has a different set of rules. Every
state.
Every
state governing body, promoter, it's all
there's like four different, there's so many cooks in the kitchen. There's four different organizations that all think they have equal power, putting in rules, they have their own interests, they have their own favorites, they have their own motives. It's wild stuff. And what you see is a lot of times is, you know, guys like Charlie Suarez getting the brunt of it.
Getting shafted.
Earlier in the day, we saw Anthony Kakache. Did I say it right? Kakache.
For the first time ever, yes, you said it right.
Because he got a nice win. One-sided beatdown over our guy Lee Wood. Ninth round stoppage. Kakache, he vacated his IBF title at 130 to take on Wood for more money, and it paid off. I kind of like that move. Kind of badass move to just give up the belt just to fight for more money.
super smart move. You've got Kakashi. Kakashi's 36 years old. He's a 36-year-old world champion, guy who's really come on late in his career. You know, he's had three big wins back-to-back. He comes out of nowhere to stop Joe Cordina. We're like, what? This guy has seven knockouts, and now he's stopping. Joe beat the hell out of Joe Cordina and stopped him late.
Beat Josh Warrington as well.
Then he beats up Josh Warrington. That wasn't really a close fight. Josh Warrington's excellent. Definitely at the end, tail end of his career at that point still, but then, okay. And then he gets this opportunity against Lee Wood, which is a big domestic scrap. Lee Wood is a star. I mean, the guy is, he's the Arturo Gatti of the UK, which is, I think, is a really good moniker for him because he comes from behind. He knocks people out. He gets dropped. He's super exciting. And for me, this guy, this had shades of like Angel Manfredi versus Arturo Gatti, because Kakashi is kind of like that Angel Manfredi guy, not a big puncher, but for whatever reason, I know I got Lee Wood's number. So let me relinquish my belt and take on Lee Wood, where I'm going to make a lot of money against a guy I know I can beat. And beat he did. He beat the hell out of Lee Wood and stopped him with a body shot, vicious body shot that doubled him over. Also, I mentioned that the age of Kakashi, 36-year-old world champion, Lee Wood's 36 too. So you're picking guys on the same age, smart move. As a guy who fought a lot of young guys when I was older, it makes a big difference. If I could have handpicked a couple older guys to fight later in my career, I certainly would have. And Kakashi had that opportunity. Very smart move.
Yeah, good management from him. And now he jumps right back into the title picture. After the fight, he's like, I want to unify with Oshaki Foster. Like, show me the money. I'm a former champ. I got someone of a name.
Well, you're a world champion now. You've been a world champ. Like, yeah. Okay, time to get paid, bro.
He literally said, quote unquote, show me the money, which I thought I was just like, everything about this is like kind of refreshing. He's not like telling me what you want to hear and playing the game. He's like, yeah, give him a belt. I'll fight a really popular guy, aging Lee Wood. We'll make some money. Lee hopefully made some money as well. And then I'll go back into title contention. Whoever wants it next, if it's Oshaki Foster, who I believe is going to be fighting Stephen Fulton at 130. He said, I'll fight Fulton. I'll fight the winner of that fight.
To 30 right away?
Believe so.
He's just trying to get more weight class belts, huh? That's a tough fight though. Oshaki Foster's good. I like
Fulton.
Oshaki.
I wouldn't be shocked if Fulton fought Tank one day in the near future.
I wouldn't be shocked either. I would not be shocked either.
I don't know what's going on with Tank Roach too. You know, I've heard August and have not heard anything as of yet. But yeah, that was over the weekend and Kakashi. For Lee Wood, there are still some domestic fights for him. Like he's 36 years old. In these wars, coming off of a really long layoff, he had the odds stacked against him in this fight. But yeah, he's had a really good career. I don't know if he's going to call it a career. I don't know if he's going to fight a few more times on a domestic level, or maybe even one more. But it had all the makings of, you know, hometown fight, almost like a retirement type of fight. One last hurrah, gave it a go. I mean, I thought it would be a little more competitive. I was tweeting out that this could potentially be a fight of the year candidate on paper. But, you know, all those factors led into Wood just not being able to come up, arise to the occasion. But this
weight class,
like,
too. I think at 26, he was so big. That was a big, big part of him being able to withstand some of those shots of those guys. Kakashi is a big 30-pounder, so that definitely played a part, too.
Right. So we'll see what's next for Kakashi. All right. Lubin, Ardriel Holmes, you were there calling it, obviously. I did not catch that fight. I know that it has a lot of meaning for 154. From what I've read, I was following along. Wasn't the most exciting fight early. Then Lubin stepped on the gas late, stopped him. Good fight for Lubin. He gets right back into the 154 picture because this is a guy that was, you know, former. He was in the middle of it, man. Remember when he fought Fundora? He was looked at as
That was only a couple years ago, and that fight was awesome.
Yeah. So Lubin's back in the picture at 154.
Yeah, I mean, it was an IBF title eliminator, 12-rounder. Ardriel Holmes, undefeated guy. I called a couple of his fights for Salida Promotions last couple of years. He's a bit of a stinker. I actually described him as a disruptor. He's not a guy. He's tall. He's long. He's 6'3" for 54, which is huge. Southpaw. He's kind of guy like he's going to stick that jab on the outside. You get close. He's going to tie you up. He's going to spin you. He's going to disrupt your offense and kind of slow the pace down and win on margins. But with a guy like Lubin, who's so dynamic, you could just see Lubin looked a little rusty in the first 3-4 rounds. But every once in a while, you'd see him open up. And one thing about Lubin, I don't care what stage of his career you look at him, he looks really good letting those hands go. He's got good power in both hands. He's got fast hands. He's got heavy hands, and he throws in combinations. He just needed to do that. As soon as he stepped on the gas, it's funny, he had one good round, and his coach Mark Ferre grabs him and goes, "See, you can do this all night long. Why can't you do this more? Do it again. Give me another round." Comes back. Mark says the same thing. "Give me another round." Next round, fight's over. He just came out that round. He's like, "All right, it's round 11. Let me just beat this guy up." And he just went out there, just let his hands go. Arjo Holmes doesn't punch with you. It's a lot of your turn, my turn. So he just kind of covered up along the ropes and took a vicious beating in that 11th round. It was mercifully stopped at the time. He went down pretty hard. Tall guys going down never look good. They never look strong on the way down. Yeah, Paul Williams, Tommy Hearns, even when he was dropped. You know, tall guys trying to get back up never looks good. So the stoppage was good. I think Lubin is going to look at this like, all right, I got the rust off. I got the stoppage. I got 11 rounds in. I haven't fought in a while. And now, IBF title contender now, which is Murtazaliyev, Bakram Murtazaliyev.
Oh, jeez.
Yikes, exactly.
So is he in line to fight him next?
Yeah. Yeah, that was an IBF title eliminator, so he should be. Like, he's been calling out Bakram.
This guy.
He's been calling. No, Lubin's calling him out. So it should be an easy fight to make.
There it is, 154. Speaking of 154, last topic here. Zou Fandora 2 got announced earlier last week. That's going to be on July 19th. It's going to be the co-main event. That's because Manny Pacquiao, at age 46, is returning to the ring to fight Mario Barrios for the WBC welterweight title. Manny Pacquiao, who fought Chris Algieri in the year 2014.
11 years ago, guys.
46 years old, skips the line, goes to the front of the line. Everyone's waiting in line with their plates out on the buffet line. Champions, contenders, people playing the game. Pacquiao kicks open the door, grabs a plate, goes right to the front of the line, says, "I am Manny Pacquiao. I am getting all the food, all the money, all the glory, and potentially a green shiny belt because Mario Barrios is ripe for the taking."
I hate the saying. Lot to unpack there, Dan. Lot to unpack here. You set the table nicely. Manny Pacquiao. I don't love when guys that age are coming back because aging brains don't take punches well. He hasn't fought in 5 years. 46 years old. And listen, when he fought his last fight was Ugas, he did not look good. He did look great against Keith Thurman when he was, I think, 40 or 41.
2019.
Yeah, that was 6 years ago. Yikes.
My last
so
win.
Yeah. So that was, he was 40, right? He was 40 years old when he beat Keith Thurman. That was, he looked great. He turned back the hands of Father Time, the clock of Father Time, and did it. This is tough, man. Again, listen, but he's his own man. He can do whatever he wants. I say that about every fighter who wants to keep fighting. It's entirely up to you. If your team and your family and you're okay with fighting, you can go fight. The fact that he skips the line, that's my issue. You got guys out there. You got unifications you can make. This weight class is wide open. You know, you got Boots, who's the uncrowned king of that weight class, even though he has a belt. But he should be the guy that everyone should be targeting and being able to unify and get those fights going. And now this kind of mucks things up. You get Manny, who comes in there. And I believe he's saying this is his last fight no matter what, right? Did you hear that?
Bro, he's been saying that for the better part.
I know that doesn't mean anything, but to set the table that way, that's not a good look. If this is your last fight, no matter what, you go out there and you say you beat a Mario Barrios. Now what? You just retire and you got the belt, and then the belt just goes vacant, and then it just, I don't know. I don't like the idea of being able to come off the couch 5 years and jump right into a title fight when there's contenders. There's a reason we have rankings. There's people are working their entire lives to get to this situation. Understand Manny's a legend. He's going to get the nod on these kinds of situations, but I don't have to like it is what I'm right. saying.
Preferential treatment. It happens in the sport all the time. There was actually Mauricio Sulaiman said there's a clause in there. Rulings
that I added yesterday morning
that a guy like Pacquiao, this situation, we're going to allow him to do it because of his status in the sport and what he means to the sport. Yeah, it is messed up. But I'm not surprised. I mean, this is part of the sport. I mean, I'm not shocked whatsoever. I don't think you are either, Chris. I don't think a lot of fans are shocked. I saw a lot of tweets out there like calling it a disgrace. I can't believe it. Yes. I mean, really, you can't believe it. You can't believe that Manny Pacquiao is getting a shot here. It's a business. It's a business more than it's a sport. And he still is big business. He's still Manny Pacquiao. He will walk in that media center and he'll do a ton of interviews. People will tune in out of curiosity. people will tune in to watch Fundora and Zhu on the co-main event and then stick around and see if Pacquiao could break some records and break his own record, become the oldest welterweight champion. He will not break George Foreman's record of oldest champion. It's Hopkins.
Bernard. Yeah.
49. Bernard. So
that's so crazy.
Pacquiao's got three more years in him. I'm not shocked. And I think it will be an interesting fight week in terms of,
I hope I get to interview Manny Pacquiao. I really hope I get the interview.
We are 100%. This is on Amazon. This is a PPV.com vehicle. So therefore he will be coming around the table. He'll be coming around, in the media center and you will be talking to Manny Pacquiao. I think the content will be exciting. I can't wait to ask him Pacquiao's stupid questions with my mini microphone. And then we go over to Algeria and Pacquiao do a stare down. I have to just get right back.
Do you remember
our
iconic stare down where he had to stand in a chair?
Oh, we're definitely going to recreate that. Like, I'm getting all the ideas right now for my content plan for July 19th.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time around Manny on that lead up. And then also I called his fight against Lucas Matisse. So I was in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur. And you know you're the GOAT when you do the fighter meeting in the fighter's room. So we had our fighter meetings, right? And we had everybody come. You know, Lucas, everybody, the whole card came and they came and sat down with me and Todd Grisham and the rest of the broadcast team. We're talking. And they're like, all right, the only one left is Manny. Yeah. Manny doesn't want to come down. So we're going to go to Manny's room. So the whole broadcast team got up and we took the elevator. We got delivered to Manny's room and he's sitting there eating a steak and a banana and just talking to us and just hanging out. And we sat on a couch and he sat down with us. It was cool. It was interesting to be around the aura of Manny Pacquiao in that way.
Well, we'll be around him again. And I want to know why he's taking this fight. He's getting into the Hall of Fame a month before. Which is crazy because in every other sport, you become eligible for the Hall of Fame 5 years after you are done playing. He is now going to be fighting for a world title 1 month after he's inducted into the Hall of Fame, which is the most boxing thing ever.
But technically, if you just said it, 5 years after, he hasn't fought in 5 years, he's eligible because he's still retired at the moment he gets inducted. He'll still be retired. You're not out of retirement until you fight again.
That first bell rings. Yeah, that would be wild. I just pulled up the WBC welterweight rankings. Devin Haney is number one somehow. Sisko is number two.
Sisko, he's good and he's been at it for a long time. He's a guy that probably won't be too happy that he's getting pushed aside, but he'll be happy because maybe there's a potential to fight Manny Pacquiao down the line, which I think everyone's going to be excited on.
Conor Benn is ranked third, Mean Machine fourth, Jin Sasaki fifth. I mean, these are all the guys that were leapfrogged.
Havalauskas is still around, huh?
Yes. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, we're saying, oh, there's all these other guys that are deserving, but you have to, if you're going by the rules of the WBC, because, like, you think of welterweight right away, you think of Brian Norman, you think of Boots, and those types of guys that you think of when it comes to welterweight. And who's the guy from that Boots just fought? Otherwise.
Stanionis.
Like, you think of those guys, like, in the mix, in the heavyweight mix, and those are the guys that should be getting shots and stuff. But if you go by, like, the rules of boxing and the processes that are involved is – Barrios is the WBC champion. So you look at the rankings. Devin Haney, number one, is crazy because he's never actually fought at 147. His last fight was at 144, and he did not look good in that fight. And you bring up Sisko, who no one really doesn't have a huge profile. Conor Benn, who also...
Devin also has not fought a welterweight yet because he fought Ramirez, who's coming up from 40 to 44. Never fought a welterweight.
Right. So if you're pointing to, like, come on, there's other guys more deserving... When you peel that back, you peel that onion back, and you actually look at the WBC welterweight rankings, it's a mishmash of guys that are...
Perfect storm for Manny's return.
Right, exactly. Perfect storm. You're right. This is Manny's back, and you can have, you know, your problems with it from the standpoint of a 46-year-old should not be fighting, but... I'm looking at the rankings and
you can't really have that problem. Like I said earlier, like if you want to fight, you're your own man, you decide to. If your family and your team is okay with you fighting, I don't think we should have. Listen, you can have a funny feeling about it, But I don't think you can sit there and be like, oh, don't make the fight, whatever. If the guy wants to fight, let's fight.
You could say that there's the people in
as
charge
long as you pass
should
the medicals.
Not allow it. Yeah, of course. He's going to pass the medicals, and hopefully he does. I'm talking about, like, they're, the powers that be should stop it. I'm not saying they should.
Who,
I'm saying
– I know, but who are the powers that be?
WBC?
We've been discussing that all show. The powers Vegas. That be are so fragmented, and they're always going to go for the money. So, you know, then they don't care. They care about making money. I mean, listen, Mario Barros, he's in a great situation. He's going to make by far the biggest payday of his career, and he's got
Tank
a 40.
And Pacquiao.
Yeah, he's got a 47-year-old guy in front of him. He could very well win.
Situation for Barrios?
No, because he's getting paid a lot. And
I know that's the win, but like you beating up an old man or you're losing to an old man.
Yeah, either way. I mean, I thought he was an old man when I fought him. And he was 30, 36. I thought he was 30. It was 11 years ago. He was 36 when I fought him. 36, something like that. And I was like, I thought he was an old man then. He wasn't. so maybe he's not. Maybe he's not an old man still. But no, it's of course it's a win for Barrios. He gets to fight a legend. So you got to look at it from a fighter's perspective. You can't think of him as fighting an old man. You're fighting a legend. So you're going to have his name on your docket, whether you win or lose, which is great. And you're going to get paid a gang of money. But also it keeps you away from Boots, who's going to eat you alive. Barrios and Boots, I don't think that's competitive at all. At all. I think Barrios and Brian Norman is a pretty good fight, and I think I would lean towards Norman. From what he's been looking like lately, how they've both been looking, yeah, I would lean towards Norman in that fight. So it's actually a win-win for Barrios.
I'm seeing a lot of people kind of clowning Barrios, like how you have no shame, like, and all this, and it's like, dude, any of these other guys would have do this, like, yes. Rolly Romero. Just I watched an interview with him. Said I'll fight Pacquiao. That's a legacy fight for me. Like all these guys will do that. Would jump at it. I don't know if Boots would because he's kind of set on that. I want belts. But going back to Barrios, has had a very interesting career. He's a welterweight for the most part of his career. And then in 140. 2021, he takes on Gerontae Davis.
Well, he was a 30-pounder at one point. Like, ridiculous.
That's what I meant, yeah. There, he jumps up to and he fights Gervonta at 140. Gives him a tough fight early. Gervonta, you know, spins him around the ring. And he fights Keith Thurman. Back-to-back losses to Davis and Thurman. Probably made some good money in both of those fights. Builds his career back up, beats Ugas in 2023.
Good win. Very good win.
And then he goes and fights on the Jake Paul Mike Tyson card on Netflix, which they were giving out really good purses for that. Gets dropped by Ramos and then fights to a draw. Leaves with his belt. If he would have lost that fight, he doesn't get this Pacquiao fight. So now at age 29, he's not even 30 yet. This guy has had mega big fights. And now he's fighting Manny Pacquiao. He has that belt. I mean, he should win. He's going to be the odds-on favorite. If Pacquiao has one more in him, one more magical night, we'll be standing in that place. We'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe Pacquiao still did it. But Barrios, come on. He's going to be the sizable favorite in this fight.
No, absolutely. I think you said he should win the fight. Doesn't mean he's going to, because Manny's a freak of nature, obviously. But also Barrios did not look good. He hasn't looked good in his last couple fights. Even the Maidana fight, he took a lot of punches. He got his eyes shut in that fight. The Abel Ramos fight, a guy with six losses, he's at gatekeeper status. Had a knockdown drag out war with him. They dropped each other. Like that left a lot to be desired. You know, the Ugas win I thought was very, very good, but yeah, since then nothing really to speak of. And he's just stylistically. So let's go historically here. Manny Pacquiao does better with taller opponents. He's very good at fighting taller guys. He's very good at fighting guys who are heavy on their lead foot. Mario Barrios is both. He's tall. He fights on his lead foot. He doesn't have a real snappy jab. He puts it out there all at the same speed, which is exactly what Manny likes. He likes a guy to throw the jab so he can get his head offline and pop you right down the middle. And a tall guy fighting over his front foot who doesn't have a dynamic jab, he's tailor-made for Manny Pacquiao. Problem is, Manny Pacquiao is 47 years old. So if Manny, like you said,
he's 46.
If he has anything left, I think Manny wins, which is wild. If he has anything left, I think he wins.
Did you watch Pacquiao's that exhibition he did with the tall kickboxer?
Looked terrible.
That was sad. Yep. That was sad. Yep.
12 rounds is a long time for a 46-year-old. And even when we look at Bernard, you know, he's 49, and you look at George Foreman, what was George, 47 or 48?
Somewhere around there.
When something like that. They're heavier weight classes. That was light heavyweight and heavyweight. It's different.
Don't throw as many punches.
They don't throw as many punches. It's a slower pace. This is welterweight. And what is Barrios, 30?
Like, this 29. Is, it's crazy. 17 years
he's
younger.
Not even 30. Yeah, it's crazy. Manny could be his father. It's a weird situation. But guess what? We're going to cover. We're going to talk a lot about it.
We'll be there.
Big news, and we'll be there.
There's going to be controversy around a lot of fights. There's going to be controversy a lot of events. People tune in out of sheer curiosity. People tune in to see history, and we're going to cover it one way or another. We'll be out there in Las Vegas for this fight. Zou Fandor.
And guess what? We're going to be excited about it too. We're going to get excited about it. Guaranteed.
Damn right. When he walks in the door,
Manny's awesome.
This is going to like bring back memories. Zou Fandor 2, co-main event, going to be awesome. The Ring is reporting that Pitbull Cruz on El Ferraro 2, which I have in my top five best fights of this year. Awesome they should fight. Be running it back. July 19th as a whole is one of the craziest days of the boxing year. We have Usyk and Dubois 2 in the afternoon here in the States. We have Bam Rodriguez stepping into the ring at night, going up against Pacquiao and Barrios. There are a ton of fights on July 19th. You'll be able to see Usyk, who is pound for pound number one on my list, and then Bam Rodriguez, who is in the top five, all fighting the same day, throwing Pacquiao, throwing Zou, throwing Pitbull. July 19th is your next boxing day. We'll have to cover it all.
Love it. That's going to be another week of us not getting a lot of sleep and doing a lot of analyzing, a lot of shows.
Well, here's the thing. We're going to be in Vegas for this event for Pacquiao Barrios. And then we're going to have to watch Usyk Dubois too, obviously. We'll have to be watching that somewhere in the hotel or the media room. And, and usually on Saturday is the day where I'm just chilling and we're getting ready for the fight. Not this one. We're getting ready for the Pacquiao broadcast while watching Usyk Dubois. And I caught... So they put together a little Usyk Dubois hype tape, you know, get everyone excited. They're really leaning into the low blow.
Yeah.
Really leaning into it.
Yeah. I think they should. Well, I mean, it's a narrative. It's definitely a narrative. I like the narrative better that Dubois is just a better fighter now. He's matured.
That was part of it.
He's coming to his own. I like that narrative. Because listen, the low blow was a low blow. So there's just way too many things to talk about with that. But I don't know. It's a good fight. I like the fight.
I like it too. It's Wembley. It's heavyweight. Usyk, who was hanging out with last week, is just a cool guy, man. Freaking guy. Doesn't look like a heavyweight. Doesn't act like the heavyweight champion. Just a man of the people hanging out playing video games at the Undisputed event.
He's got very, very, very intense eyes.
Oh my God, we did a stare
very,
down.
Very I don't know if I told you this. Eyes.
I didn't like. I just went up to him casually. Didn't have the cameras or anything, and I was just like, "Yo, what happened with that last stare down with Dubois?" I was like, "When he shoved him, like the one that was last week, it was super awkward." Dubois shoves him, and he goes, "I couldn't really understand what he was saying because it was loud in there." So Usyk just tries to he gets on my level, he ducks down a little bit, and he does a stare down with me. And all of a sudden, I'm at this party. I'm having a stare down with Usyk. I'm looking into those crazy eyes, and I was like, "This is so cool. This is one of the craziest things." He is, yeah. When you do the stare down with him, he gets scary. When he's just hanging out, he seems like a very friendly, funny guy with a good sense of humor. He could just turn it on. And he said he's not ready to retire. He said, when I asked him that as well, he said, "I said, how many more you got in you?" He's like, "I don't know, maybe one." Then he looks at me, goes, "Maybe two, maybe three." This guy doesn't. He's making the most money now, you know?
Of course.
He was top number two on the money list last year behind Fury. So
he's making generational wealth right now. So more power.
Either
to
you
him.
Walk away with it or you like, all right, let me tap in a little bit more. And after this, I don't know who he fights because
I mean, some other heavyweight will emerge, as always. There'll be someone.
I would like a Tuma versus Usyk would be the fairy tale hand off the You know what I mean? If you think Otunga's next.
Or that cruiserweight. What's his name?
Opetaia.
That's a narrative. Opetaia, former cruiserweight, comes up, gets the shot to fight the former cruiserweights. We got a cruiserweight. It's like, I wanted this fight at cruiserweight. Well, you went to heavyweight. Now we're going to do it at heavyweight. There's a narrative there.
Or if you believe like Otuma is the traditional heavyweight.
Right. But if Obataya beats Zerto, I think he's got a direct shot at stepping into an Usyk fight. Mm.
All right. That is our show this week. We will be back at the end of the week. Not many big fights this upcoming weekend, but we will find something to talk about. We always do. Something will pop up. Something ridiculous will pop up. Something
insane. Or we'll do history. We'll talk history. People like
anything.
History.
We're back to our regular schedule. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Last week was a huge week for us. Probably the best week in the history of the podcast. We did some really cool things, and everyone that tuned in, thank you very much. We'll be back. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. So I don't even know my own saying. Goodbye.